見送った当たり前に割り切れる人最後だから、何かするだけの人、僕が愛した人、僕を置いてどこまでも行ってしまう。
To the second time of Skylark of Space, thank you so very much.
Go tape.
Hear now the words.
Greetings. I am Publius, and you, I suppose you know who you are listening to a long-form spoken word presentation on AnonRadio.net.
Well, it is Friday.The 30th of December in the glorious future year of 2022.
We'll pick up the countdown shortly here in H-minus 10 seconds. The countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Cut, Quantel, opt in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you a step farther out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society.Okay, well, today is the 2nd of December in the glorious future year of 2023. And I am back from Los Angeles. Last weekend, I was at LostCon, the local science fiction fandom convention there.I see that there are people in COM who are talking about organizing conventions and the difficulties and expenses associated therewith. There are friends of mine who that's what they do for a hobby, is organize science fiction conventions. In fact, that is why I was in Los Angeles in the first place, primarily. And I suppose they don't have to be horribly expensive. It all depends what your expectations are, essentially. Anyway, Where was I? Let's see. Now, you know, for example, I would say that the Vintage Computer Festival Europe that I attended in the spring was probably pretty inexpensive to organize. You know, that they had a meeting hall, which is a modest size,for a couple of days. Fandom conventions often rely on hotels, which have meeting space in them, and if you negotiate your hotel contract right, you can get the meeting space for free if you guarantee enough people staying in the hotel, and you can get reasonably discounted rates on the hotel as well. So it doesn't have to be that bad.Anyhow, but there are people who organize conventions as a hobby. In fact, right now, Right now, there is going on an event called a SMOFCON, which is a meeting of people who organize science fiction fandom conventions as a hobby. So I would say that if you want to talk about organizing a convention with people who actually know the ins and outs of it and have experienced the best and worst that that has to offer, I would say, get thee to the SMOFCON. Ask those folks what their idea is. Now, do I have a convention report for you about LostCon? Well, I could provide one. It's pretty indistinguished, honestly. I was on several panels, one of which actually overlapped in time with this time slot, which is why I wasn't able to do any kind of a show last week. And we, you know, I discussed some interesting things with some interesting people. I set up a large display, and a friend of mine took some good photographs of it, which I have to get from her. We'll see how I manage that. I will say, however, much to my great unhappiness, that the display was pilfered, that I had on display a number of numismatic items, such as medals from the East German nuclear power plant at Greifswald, such as Soviet and Kazakh space commemorative coins, and many of those were just carried away by somebody. Even into a sort of a plastic frame holder thing, which contained not only an Eisenhower dollar, but also a U.S. $2.40 postage stamp with the moon landing motif. Anyway, you know, I had some interesting conversations with people who seemed positively inclined, but, you know, I had brought leaflets, sample copies of Blast. Anybody who's one of my Patreon supporters will be receiving one of those in the mail very soon, so watch your mailboxes. If you would like to receive mail from me on a regular basis, and you're interested in the kinds of topics that I talk about on this show, patreon.com/man_and_atom. You know, at the $1 a month level, I'll send you one of these hologram envelopes with stickers and things in it, and then beyond that, there's other stuff. But yeah, you'll receive mail from me. Right. You know, there's the introductory thing where I send you some stickers, badges, leaflets, whatever, depending on the level. And then, at irregularly later on, I will also send you mail. In fact, I even sent some to a couple of folks who were my Patreon supporters but dropped off. Just to sort of keep up, right? So yeah, I had little trifolds. I had a couple of, you know, sample copies of Blast. I had the badges, right, and the stickers. I had some of my Luna Project posters, which are really nice posters, tabloid size, 11 by 17 inches, so close to A3 size, I guess. Not exactly the same, but the things that I actually put out for people to take away, not so many of them got taken away, but for whatever reason, people decided to help themselves to my actual display items, which I wasn't best pleased by, I'll tell you right now. It almost makes me despair about in-person outreach. You know, I realize this is always a hazard when you don't have, you know, a locked glass display cabinet or something, but I want people to be able to pick these things up and look at them. I just don't want them to carry them away with them. You know, that's my feeling on it. Also, people carried away quite a few of the foreign coins that I had brought as tokens for the info phone. That's less serious. Strange to me, but not serious. I had told the accessibility desk that I had an exhibit which was audio only, because a low vision person, there were quite a few blind or visually impaired people at the convention, and one of them mentioned to me, oh, I think this is really cool that you have an exhibit which is audio only. And so I did. I went to the accessibility desk and said, hey, you should know I have an exhibit that is audio only. But it didn't seem to see much use. In other words, when I opened the coin box, there were only, you know, 4 or 5 tokens in there, whereas there were, you know, 10 or 15 that were just taken by somebody for some reason. Clearly, they didn't use them for the info phone. What they were going to use them for, I've no idea. So as you can see, I still don't understand people, which makes it difficult for me to interact with people usefully. But as I say, I got these convention badge ribbons, which are printed, which are a very popular item at science fiction fandom conventions anyway. People have their badges, which give you their name and frequently where they're from, and then they'll stick these ribbons to the bottom of them, and some people get these really long strings like Babylonian, you know, the false beards of Babylonian priests is the only thing I can really compare them to. Anyway, but as I say, people who are supporting me on Patreon will receive those various little items. And let's see. Just to make sure that I have that, I'm going to drop that into Calm here. Right? Where am I? Oh, there it is. Drop that into the metadata for the stream so you can all see. Yes. Okay, so there's that. So that more or less is what's going on with me right now, I guess, right? Also, as always, I encourage you to send me your cards and letters, Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas 76101, United States of America. I'll probably read your letters out on the air. I'll probably send you something in return. That's what I tend to do. Another point that I'm going to make here is you don't have to just commit to a recurring subscription through Patreon. I do also accept money by PayPal. PayPal.me/PrometheusLives, and I'll drop that into the metadata as well. Right, okay, there's that. Anyhow, so, looking at the world around us, of course the new COP Conference of Parties to the UN Climate Pact is underway in the United Arab Emirates, under the chairmanship of the guy who's the head of the state oil company. Is this achieving anything? One has grounds to doubt. you know, I have my doubts. Maybe I'm just a doubtful and sour person, but when I look at the objectives which have been set, and then I look at the actual conditions in the world, I say these two things don't match. So, a great example of this, on the 30th, right, a couple days ago, on the 30th of November, Germany had to import a total of 161 and three quarters megawatt hours of electricity. No, that's not right because, okay, I'm looking at that. That's a dot. I have to remember that the Germans reverse the use of the dot and the comma. All right, 161,727 megawatt hours of electricity. So 162 gigawatt hours of electricity. Yeah, that seems like a nasty number. About 6.75 gigawatts continuous power, which coincidentally, you know, if you divide that by 1,400 megawatts, which is the... Yeah, so that would be five of their standard nuclear power plants, which they all shut down back at the beginning of the year. You may remember that. Yeah. For this, they paid some 29.9 million euros, which is, as it turns out, quite expensive. Sorry, I'm looking at the information in German and having to do the German to English in my head. Anyway, but the interesting thing about this is that there's been an announcement there. The Greens, remember the people who are so committed to climate protection, the Greens, that they'll glue themselves, you know, the people who glue themselves to the roadway because they're so committed to climate protection. Yes, they're proud to announce that as of the 17th of November, the Jänschwalde coal power plant, which had been shut down since 2018, is back operating at its full nominal power of 3 gigawatts. Megawatts of coal-fired power brought back online when they said it had been permanently shut down. But the idea of bringing back online any of the nuclear power plants that they say have been permanently shut down, that, oh no, that is a hissing. That is poison, right? Because nuclear power is a Hochrisikotechnologie, a high-risk technology, and it generates waste that no one knows how to handle. Well, they're dumping the waste of the coal-fired power plants directly into the atmosphere. Surely there can't be a worse mode of handling nuclear waste. Anyhow, so... The thing is that the German green politicians say that the Energiewende, the energy transition, is going as planned. And either they're extraordinarily delusional or they're telling the truth. And I'm willing to believe them, right? I'm willing to believe that they're telling the truth, that the energy transition is going as planned. In other words, that it was never about reducing greenhouse gas emissions, that they never had any interest in reducing greenhouse gas emissions, never any intention of doing that, that their whole interest, their whole intention, everything they were about was simply in eliminating the nuclear power stations, thus giving fossil fuels untrammeled access. In other words, the whole point of the truly immense investments in wind and solar, which have driven up the price of electricity in Germany to a figure of something like 60 cents a kilowatt hour. 10 times what the nuclear power plants are prepared to sell for if they're allowed to restart. The whole point was simply to be able to say we don't need nuclear power because we have this other source of energy. And from my reading of the history of energy policy debates going back to the 1970s, even a little bit into the 1960s, that's what it's always been about. The whole purpose of talking about wind and solar was to provide a reason to say we don't need nuclear energy, and we especially don't need the breeder reactor, the thing that makes nuclear energy permanent, the thing that makes it forever, the thing that is absolutely indispensable if we are going to have a nuclear-powered world. Because current supplies of nuclear fuel will perhaps suffice to power the world for a few years at current rates of energy consumption in existing type reactors, what are called converter reactors. But the people who created those converter reactors were well aware that they were not a long-term solution, which is why the very first electricity generated by a nuclear reactor was generated by experimental breeder reactor number one all the way back in 1951, as I never tire of reminding you, right? From the very beginning, it was clear that nuclear power, nuclear energy, would hardly be worth investing in if it were limited to the energy available from uranium-235, because uranium-235 is 0.7% of natural uranium. Uranium is more common in the Earth's crust than silver, but that doesn't mean it's common and cheap. And so if the only energy we could ever hope to extract was the energy of uranium-235, nuclear power would be limited to some very special situations, very narrow circumstances, such as submarine propulsion. But in parallel, right, in parallel with the work on the submarine power plant, the work was undertaken on the breeder reactor to answer the question, can we get our energy from uranium-235 and from uranium-238 and thorium-232. That's what the breeder reactor does, right? To say that it creates more nuclear fuel than it consumes or something is really misleading. What it does is unlock the energy of uranium-238 and thorium-232. That uranium-235 can sustain a fission chain reaction all by itself. Its energy is readily available. But just as much energy as is available from each atom of uranium-235 is available from each atom of uranium-238 or thorium-232. It's simply not in a readily available form because those atoms don't break up as easily and therefore cannot sustain the chain reaction. Well, you know, no mass of uranium-238 or thorium-232, no matter how large, can sustain a chain reaction because when the neutrons are emitted from fission with high energy, they can cause fission in either of those two nuclei. But those two nuclei have a relatively small chance of fissioning, and the most likely thing is the neutron simply caroms off, losing a little bit of energy. After 3 to 5 such collisions, it no longer has enough energy to cause fission in thorium-232 or uranium-238, and therefore a chain reaction cannot be propagated. Now, if you have a little bit of uranium-235 and the right arrangement and various other things, you can propagate the chain reaction in a mixture of uranium-235 and uranium-238, which occurs in nature, or of uranium-235 and thorium-232. And if you do it right, you can get an effect where the conversion of uranium-238 into plutonium or of thorium-232 into uranium-233 occurs faster than the using up of uranium-235. Why is this important? Well, it's important because uranium-233 and plutonium-239 have the same property as uranium-235 of fissioning with neutrons of energy, which means that by blending the uranium-233 back into thorium-232 or the plutonium back into the uranium-238, you can continually use those fuels. So you can get your energy from those plentiful fuels, from uranium-238, which is nearly all of the uranium that occurs in nature, from thorium-232, which is effectively all of the thorium which occurs in nature, and is at least three times as common in the crust of the Earth as uranium is. Right, that is what the Breeder reactor does. The Breeder reactor turns nuclear energy from something which could satisfy a small fraction of the needs of the world for a short period of time, right, a few generations, or all the needs of the world for a few years, in which case it's hardly worth doing, into something which can satisfy all the energy needs of the world for an indefinite time to come. And I'm not just talking about current consumption. You write, the uranium already above ground, used in breeder reactors, and neglecting thorium, has more fuel value than all the fossil fuels that could ever be dug up. And the energy produced is provided in convenient form, right? People talk about, well, you know, solar panels and wind machines, they produce electricity. That's the most convenient form of energy. Well, maybe it is and maybe it isn't. But the way in which they produce it certainly isn't convenient because it's spread out over large areas, right? And it's also not constant. Whereas a nuclear central station, which can be placed right near a city, right, where electricity and also heat are wanted most, a nuclear central station produces its energy in a controlled fashion, so you get it when you ask for it, not just when it happens to be available. And, you know, it's compact, it's concentrated, it's continuous, it has all the virtues that fossil fuels have and more, right? Because it does not degrade the Earth's environment in the way that using fossil fuels does, or even in the ways that using renewable energy does. You know, this is the point, right? Rule number one of holes. If you're in a hole, stop digging. We can translate this to, if you're in an environmental crisis, and people will argue about whether we're in an environmental crisis or whether we're heading into one or what have you, but if you're in an environmental crisis, stop imposing heavier burdens on the biosphere. This seems obvious, doesn't it? If you're in a hole, stop digging. If you're in an environmental crisis, stop imposing heavier burdens on the biosphere. And yet, the idea of biofuels, for example, the idea that we're going to use corn ethanol and soybean oil as jet fuel, right, as fuel for aircraft, right, mass-scale aircraft propulsion. This is a great example of just digging the hole in further. It's what you shouldn't be doing at all. So why are people promoting, as solutions, things that only dig the hole in further, right? I've continued to say, I doubt the sincerity of anyone who says, this is a great crisis, we are facing a great crisis, we have to do something about it now, we have to do something about it urgently, we have to solve the problem, and the only solutions I will accept are this short list of ineffective ones. Right? I doubt the sincerity, right? And, of course, I think that a lot of the people who say, well, I don't believe in this climate stuff, what they're really reacting to is the obvious fact that the people who say that we must, you know, whose people talking, screaming the loudest, are also at the same time demanding that only ineffective solutions be used. Who could believe in the sincerity of someone who talks like that? Well, I don't talk like that, as you might have noticed. I'm talking about real solutions that can be implemented, and that will address the problem. Anyway, you've been listening to A Step Farther Out on Anon Radio, which is a service of the SDF Public Access Unix System. Tune in for my show every...